This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Michael K., Don LeGrec, and Peter Rosenberg, we're all separated, but for the next 4 hours, we're together. The other 20... Well, that's your responsibility. I'm sure you'll handle that well. A lot of stuff to talk about today. We'll get to all of it, I promise. Even in the 4 hours, we'll make it work. The Dodgers win 8-3 yesterday. Clayton Kershaw pitches very, very well. Remember, he came into that game with an ERA of about 5.5 in World Series play. This is a guy who has an ERA under 3 for his career in regular season ball. So that's a little bit startling, but he gave them 6 innings, 1-run ball. The only run scored on a Kevin Kiermaier home run. Had a lot of swings and misses, over 50%, which is higher than usual for him. He struggled a little bit in that first inning, but then settled down. I think the home run by Kiermaier broke a string of 13 straight Rays retired. Doesn't mean that the Rays are done. Doesn't mean that the Dodgers have a stranglehold on the series. The Rays obviously have a pitching advantage today where they have Blake Snell going against Tony Gonsolin. Now, they could use Urias and they can use May out of the bullpen. So the Dodgers are set up relief-wise. But, you know, yesterday with 8-3, Don and Peter, they don't have to use any of their high-leverage guys. Worked out perfectly for them. And strangely enough, Kevin Cash stayed with Tyler Glasnow way longer than they usually stay with a starter, well over 100. And I kind of think that in my own little sick way that he was doing that in order to set his pitching up for the rest of the series. Let Glasnow take the bullet last night, and then he set up to have Snell give him 5 innings and then really bring in the big guns out of the bullpen, because that's just very unusual for a Rays team to hang a guy out to dry when he was really, really struggling there. You know, usually they take their pitchers out about 80 pitches, and this was over 100 for Glasnow. So I think both of these teams, with their analytics department, they're playing three-dimensional chess when we're looking at it in a checkers variety. Well, why doesn't he just pull the pitcher here? He's probably thinking games 2 and 3 as well.
Yeah, because you got to live to fight another day, right? And it's a long series, and it's just game one, but you don't want to do anything that's going to hurt, you know, the possibility of winning game two, where you can really put yourself in a hole, lose the first 2 games of the series. So it's not give up. But, you know, watching that game, Michael, you got the sense that it was over. I mean, the Dodgers just their pitching not last night was superior, and they were hitting, and it came together after what looked like a pitcher's duel going into the fourth inning just explodes. With Mookie Betts, who, Michael, have you ever seen a player leave a big market and go someplace else and carry a team the way Mookie Betts has in this postseason? I mean, usually we see the Rays or the Marlins or the Padres give up a player like this. This guy came from the Red Sox. And maybe he is the missing piece that the Dodgers have been looking for all this time. And I just got the sense it was over, so you got to live to fight another day.
He's such a great player, and now the narrative that's out there is the Red Sox are going to regret this forever, and they probably will. You know, it's not quite Babe Ruth to the Yankees, because they don't have to play the Dodgers every single season 19 times, but he's a special player, and usually a special player on a big market team stays with that team. But I'm going to defend the Red Sox just a little bit. I hate the fact that they traded him to get under the tax threshold, if that was the reason. I believe that that was the reason. And also they were able to piggyback David Price's contract onto Mookie. You know, if you want Mookie, you're going to have to take David Price's remaining $96 million. That's a lot of money to save. But I think the Red Sox also had a sinking feeling, although he never articulated this, he might not have signed with them. Maybe they had, like, preliminary discussions. Well, you know, what's it going to take? Maybe he just didn't want to play in Boston. We have no idea. But if they were privy to that information, isn't it better they got Alex Verdugo and Jeter Downs rather than having him play this year, which would have meant nothing because the Red Sox still wouldn't have made the playoffs because they had no pitching. And then you lose him for what? Draft pick compensation? I think that what the Red Sox got back is more than they would have gotten for draft pick compensation. So if they knew that Mookie Betts would not have signed there no matter what the price, then they made the right move. Now, if they did it simply to get under the tax threshold, shame on them.
Right.
That's a big market team. That's a team that has a tremendous amount of resources. They own their own network. They own the stadium, Fenway Park. They shouldn't have to ever do anything because of money. But again, there might be extenuating circumstances that the media that's building this narrative, how could the Red Sox have done it? Well, maybe the Red Sox just knew the guy didn't want to play in Boston.
Maybe. But we don't know that.
We don't know.
And even if that happened, I mean, how rare is that? That a player, you know, in a big-time market, a big-time team, would want out that badly, that there was no way that they were going to be able to re-sign him. Because you can't even go with, oh, look how bad the Red Sox are. We saw them be the worst team in baseball in 2012 and win the World Series the next year. So the Red Sox are going to be back, even if they have to spend the money to make sure that they come back. So how often does that even happen? That a big-time player says, I don't want to play in Boston.
Well,
I don't want to play with the Yankees.
Maybe
I don't want to play with the Dodgers.
There might be players that are African-American that might not feel comfortable in Boston. We've heard those awful stories where, you know, guys have told these stories like Adam Jones and, you know, the things that they've been called and things like that. Bill Russell has told unbelievable stories about Boston playing
right there,
and he was a god. So maybe that plays into, I'm talking, you know, just off the cuff here, I have no idea why he wouldn't want to play with them. But if the Red Sox got rid of him for money, then they will regret this forever. Because just to reset the salary cap, that's ridiculous. There had to be another way to do it. And so what if you paid a salary tax? They've got so much money, they print money up in Boston. Print it. And they've won championships, so many championships, that they've certainly made their money. That if you had to keep Mookie Betts and pay a salary tax, so what? But again, they might know stuff that we don't know. Now, another thing that Mookie Betts brings to mind, it really angered our producer, Andrew Gunling. So I did the deep dive with our information guru at Yes, James Smythe. You know, Mookie Betts stole two bases in that inning and then scored because he's so fast on a ground ball with the infield in. So he created a run. And Andrew said, I don't understand why they don't steal bases, because although it's a home run league now, a home run sport, there are way more singles than there are home runs. Well, the answer is, in order for a stolen base to be effective, you have to steal at a 75% clip. This is according to the analytics. If you get thrown out more than 25% of the time, it's not worth the gamble. Now, the average in Major League Baseball this year is actually 75% on the nose. But I think, and Don, you brought this up in our pre-show meeting, teams are limiting steal attempts to just their best runners most often. Because before this year, the major league average has been in the low 70s for the last 15 years or so. This year it went up to 75 because they only steal when they know that they could definitely
right.
make it. Like, look at Mookie Betts. He stole 12 base. He had 12 attempts this year. He's successful 10 times, but not everybody is Mookie Betts. If you steal under 75%, if you get caught 30% of the time, you're hurting your team. And I think that singles are almost an accident. They're always trying to hit home runs. If you get a single, it's almost a byproduct of you didn't hit the ball well.
No,
so that's why I don't think that the stolen base is going to be a big part of Major League Baseball unless you get guys that steal at about 75 to 80%.
And again, you can't believe the, you know, the fallacy of the predetermined outcome, right? Or whatever. Just because he was 10 of 12, that means he would be, you know, 38 of 40. No. If he doubled his attempts, he might get thrown out a lot more, because I think in the way that they steal now, they're just taking what the team has given them a lot of times. You know, they're stealing a base, and they're pretty much guaranteeing that they're going to make it. Brett Gardner is big at this. You look, he's the fastest Yankee, right? He would go, you know, 9 of 10 every year stealing bases. You say, why doesn't he steal more? Well, if he steals more, he'll get thrown out more. And they don't want that. So if everybody stole more, they get thrown out more, and they'd be red hot in the analytic world, because now the batter who was trying to hit a two-run home run is now only going to be able to hit a solo home run. And if it's a home run hitter, Michael, and you brought this up in the show meeting, if I steal a base, then I'm going to walk Stan, or I'm going to walk.
Yeah,
Bellinger.
You might lose a bat.
I'm going to walk Judge. I'm going to walk whoever is up next. And yeah, you could look at it, and Andrew's thought would be, well, now I got two runners on. And now I got a chance at a three-run home run, but that's just not the way that they're thinking. If you get thrown out, you just missed an opportunity at a two-run home run. That's their mentality. That's what they're thinking about.
So interesting first game, and now we see where it goes. So they took out Kershaw with, you know, a very low pitch count, so maybe he pitches on short rest. I think it would be smart to just pitch Kershaw again on normal rest. Pitch him in game five. Don't you agree, Don?
Absolutely.
Don't push him.
I'm not pitching him.
I mean, if you're pitching him on short rest, do you really intend to pitch him in game seven as well, if there's one? So you'd rather have a guy with a bad back pitch twice on short rest?
Well,
I'd rather have him pitch fully healthy on normal rest.
How many innings yesterday?
Six, and about 80-something pitches.
Mm. And that includes 2 days off or one?
A day off between the second and third game, a day off between the fifth and sixth game.
Right. Yeah.
This portion of the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by the New York City Vision Zero Initiative. More pedestrians are hurt in crashes around sunset than any other time. If you don't drive carefully, ask yourself, is it worth it? With daylight savings time ending, Vision Zero reminds you, slow down. Now, this is an interesting thing that just came up that I think certainly bears addressing. Marcus Stroman is not shy about articulating what he wants to talk about on Twitter. And I think sometimes to his detriment. The same thing with Trevor Bauer. We want players to be honest, but I know that some teams would rather players pipe down a little bit and not cause so much controversy online. Well, an hour ago, Marcus Stroman, Jared Karibas, who I hope I'm pronouncing Jared's last name right, who covers baseball, unearthed a direct quote from Brian Cashman that said that Marcus Stroman is not a difference maker and he's never going to forget that. This is about, I guess Jared brought that up after Stroman tweeted this out. Check this out, what Marcus tweeted out. Besides Cole, there's no current Yankee pitcher who will be anywhere in my league over the next 5 to 7 years. Their pitching always folds in the end. That lineup and payroll should be winning World Series left and right, yet they're in a drought. LOL. Don, does he think that that's going to get him to be a Yankee?
No.
First of all, if the Yankees sign him, and you've got Severino there, and you've got Jordan Montgomery there, and let's say they bring back Tanaka, they know that you said that you're better than them. So to what end is he tweeting this stuff out?
Because I think he knows there's no shot he would go to the Yankees. And so he's trying to build a narrative up to where, hey, I want to be there. They just don't want me, and they're wrong for not wanting me. And he'll go sign someplace else, and he's confident in his abilities, and he'll kill it, and he's just creating this narrative of the Yankees failing because of their pitching, and there's Stroman going wherever he goes next year and is winning, you know, 15, 16 games and being a great pitcher and really sticking it to the Yankees. So that's all he's doing. He just knows for a fact he's never going to go there. And if you know you're not going there, you don't have to worry about any of that stuff.
Or is he trying to like tell them, hey, I'm the answer? I mean, because Brian didn't want to get him when Toronto was trading him. And I've told this story before. Stroman, he could deny it all he wants. I have sources within the Blue Jay clubhouse that he pitched a fit when he was told that the Mets got him. He wanted to go to the Yankees. Brian didn't want him. He didn't want him at that price. He didn't think that he was going to help.
Well,
Marcus Stroman's a good pitcher, but even Trevor Bauer is doing this. Every time like somebody struggles in the playoff, gee, I wonder if they need another starter. It's not a good look, man.
Well, they're begging. They're begging for an opportunity.
Why do they have to beg?
Again.
They're both very good pitchers. But Why beg? Let your agents beg. Why beg in public?
Well, because that's just the way the modern athlete works right now and can use social media. You know, it's all about trying to create your numbers, right? And if the numbers aren't there because you've had an injury like Stroman had or decided to opt out because of COVID, now you've got to kind of create that. He's smart enough to know, Michael, he's a smart guy, that the Yankees do not want him and that him begging to go there isn't going to change his mind. You think Brian Cashman looks at the numbers, their analytic people look at the numbers, and have formulated an opinion on Marcus Stroman that's going to be changed because of something he tweeted out? There's no way. He knows it's not going to work. But he kind of wants to make it look like to the world, hey, I'm confident in myself, get the Yankee fans all begging for him, and if they fail next year, it'll be, what's the conversation going to be here? Could have Marcus Stroman.
This is such a weird, the idea of doing it in this backhanded way where you're slighting the Yankees while simultaneously saying you'd go there, it makes even less sense than begging.
And also, Peter, here's a vibe that nobody even considers. A lot of the pitchers that he just took a shot at, they're going to be back. So you might pitch against them next year. Why would you want to have somebody have an extra added incentive to beat you? Oh, this guy said that. I'm going to really give my A game. Because there are different levels of game that you could bring to each performance. And if you're really motivated like you are in a World Series that this guy said this about me, why do you want that? Because you're not just insulting the Yankees, you're insulting other players. Who does that? Why would you insult the other pitchers? Why would you go out and insult Luis Severino? And by the way, Luis Severino, when healthy, is a much better pitcher than Marcus Stroman. Much better. Yeah, now, is he ever going to be healthy again? I don't know.
Right, but that's still, I mean, with all due respect to Stroman, who we know is a nice pitcher, and I think could be a, you know, a solid number two or a great number three, Sevy's a number one.
Who would be a number two behind Cole, just like the Yankees dreamed of.
Right. But on a normal team without the best pitcher in baseball, Sevy's a number one.
When he's healthy, yep.
Yeah, and he's coming back from injury. Montgomery's coming back from Tommy John and pitched brilliantly in Game 4. We have no idea what Garcia is going to be, but he could turn out to be a great pitcher, right?
So, yeah.
I mean, to say that you're
so much better than Davey Garcia in the next 5 to 7 years. Davey Garcia is 21 years old. His best days are ahead of him.
Listen, he probably feels like he was slighted. Like the Yankees started this. They said they didn't want him. And so he felt like they disrespected him. And now he's just going to make it his life's work to try to make the Yankees look bad. And those pitchers are collateral damage. And maybe they'll get it. You know, they're all young, too. So, you know, he probably would meet up with them and say, listen, I meant nothing personal. I just really upset that the Yankees. Cashman didn't have to say that.
Well, because everybody was jumping on Cashman. Why didn't you get Marcus Stroman? And he says he's not a difference maker, meaning that the guys that I have are just as good as him.
Right. But you can understand, Peter, hearing that and going, I'm not a difference maker. I'm going to show you. And then you go out and it's your pitching again that fails you. He's just trolling. And he knows that he'll never be a Yankee, so he can do that and doesn't have to worry about like end up, you know, being teammates with these guys that he disrespected.
But here's the thing. If you're maybe he got encouraged to do this by his agent, but if you're just trolling and you know you're never going to be a Yankee, why put out the follow-up tweet that says, "And I don't hold grudges, I'd go anywhere next year." You kind of just got to sit in the trash you just talked. He then tried to hedge the bet afterwards and be like, but I'm down to come pitch for you.
Oh, so he had a second tweet, which I didn't see?
Yeah. Oh, he followed it up with, let me see if I have the quote. Oh, yeah, here it is. He wrote, the first one was, besides Cole, there's no current Yankee. He'll be anywhere in my league over the next 5 to 7 years. Their pitching always folds in the end. That lineup and payroll should be winning World Series left and right, and they're in a drought. In another tweet, he added, I don't hold grudges ever. I'm open to compete wherever next year. Excited to see how free agency plays out.
I also love the narrative. You know, they're pitching folded. They lost game 5 2-1.
Yeah, it's also not true. But Don, you see what I'm saying? It's a head.
If you want to look at every single time they've been knocked out of the postseason, they don't end up hitting in the elimination game. That lineup scored one run against the Rays. One. Their pitching gave up two.
I think you're applying way too much logic to this.
Oh, my God. Okay. Hold on. There's another tweet, Don.
All right, let's hear that one. I'm sorry.
There's another tweet. Forgot about Sevy.
Maybe he's listening to the show.
Forgot about Sevy. When he's healthy, he's unreal. One of my favorites to watch. Cole and Severino. There's still 3 spots in that staff that need help. Am I wrong? LOL.
Is the next tweet going to be, I forgot about Davey Garcia?
No, I think he's including Davey Garcia.
So he thinks he's better than Tanaka. Look at Tanaka's last 5 years, or 7 years. Well, I think Marcus has only been a big leaguer 5 years, maybe. To compare them to Marcus Stroman's. And also, he's saying that he was a different, you know, he felt he could help the Yankees. Well, he opted out this year anyway. He wouldn't help the Yankees. I don't give him any grief at all for opting out. My health is the most important thing, too. So I would opt out if I thought I was in danger. So he wouldn't help the Yankees. He didn't help the Mets.
Yeah, but
instead,
you know what?
This is another terrible mark on Brody Van Wagenen. Cool. Trading for the guy, giving up 2 good young pitchers, getting however many games out of him last year, and none this year.
Well, Michael, you just answer your question. He wouldn't have opted out if he was a Yankee.
Well, then that's a bad look.
But you think you'd be healthier as a Yankee? He's complaining that he's saying he could have helped the Yankees this year. Then that means he would not have opted out.
Well, what an awful...
But what else am I supposed to think?
Because the guy who has $14 billion in the bank, is going to own the team. I never thought the Mets would re-sign him because he would cost too much money. This guy doesn't care, Steve Cohen. Marcus, get off of social media until you sign a contract. Same thing with Trevor Bauer, but they think that's their best route.
I think that's what's happening here. It's the modern-day athlete, Michael. And you know what? Peter brought up the agent. It's the modern-day agent, too.
Scott Boras's clients don't do that. They don't.
I know, but it happens. I mean, it's using social media to be able to create your own narrative. They used to be able to do it in the media, and now they can do it of their own. But this is just a stream of consciousness with him where he's probably not putting two and two together. First of all, you opted out because you're afraid of COVID. Now, you know, you're claiming that you would have been able to help the Yankees this year, within the insinuation is you only opted out from the Mets because you didn't think the Mets were any good. And you weren't going to take a chance because you didn't think that, why bother? We're not going to make the playoffs anyway. If he was a Yankee, he would have stayed. He would have risked it, obviously. Or he just would have felt more compelled to complete the season. And then just forgetting
about
Severino.
Domingo Germán, right? Domingo Germán won 18 games in 2019. 18 games.
He's
so better than Domingo Germán, too.
Right. He's mad at the Yankees. He got emotional with a tweet because I don't think he started it. Somebody, as you said, kind of got the ball rolling. He had to jump in. And then as he's going through this, just didn't take the time to think it out. Now there's a bunch of holes in his argument. Now he's exposed himself for opting out. He's forgetting about Severino.
So Kaysen writes, sorry, Michael, Don, and Peter, but Stroh is right. Yankees would rather have Jay Happ than Stroman. Take a walk. Well, when they could have made that deal, right? Severino was a pitcher. Jay Happ, I think, went down the stretch and was undefeated. James Paxton's a better pitcher than Stroman when he's healthy. He was 10-0. So what Cashman said was right. He's not a difference maker for us. Where exactly is he fitting in? And when the trade deadline was happening, Domingo Germán was winning every single start. And Tanaka was pitching well. So don't think about 2020. Think about when they could have gotten him in 2019. And now think about as a free agent where the Yankees might actually cut payroll this year. How much is he going to cost? I love a guy who's very confident in himself, but you make a tweet like that and then you forget about Severino?
And then, as Peter said, at the old, but, you know, I don't hold any grudges if you want to sign me. So it's all over the place.
Got very excited when I saw Van Gundy got a job.
But not the Van Gundy you want.
No, come on. Let's be honest. Let's just be honest. This show is rooting for Jeff Van Gundy to be back in the NBA. It's all of us, right?
I agree. I want him. I mean, we probably
sure
never come on as
great,
a guest again.
No, but that's okay. I mean, don't get me wrong. Stan looks like my dad, but I was rooting for Jeff to get that job.
He looks like your dad. Interesting.
He doesn't look like your dad.
It depends.
Your dad doesn't look like Ron Jeremy.
Goodness.
I got news for you, Don.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Not right now, but it's been said.
So Mike Vaccaro has a good tweet. He has a poll that's up. In 10 years, who will feel worse? St. Louis fans about Arozarena? Boston fans about Mookie? Mets fans about Kalenic?
Well, we don't know what Kalenic is going to be.
I think Boston Arozarena. Fans about Mookie. St. Louis never really knew what they had
Mookie's Arozarena. Established player. Who's going to help the Dodgers possibly win a championship immediately. And he's already a great player. So you're talking about two kids that could maybe they could blossom in. We'll have to see 10 years from now. Right. They might both be on their path to a Hall of Fame career and Betts may be injury prone or something. And this will be the last, the only championship maybe that they win with Mookie Betts. But right now, who are you betting on?
I know we're up against fabulous. The clock, but I want to take this call so badly. Do you mind
please.
If we go over a little bit?
Go ahead.
Patrick in Queens. Patrick.
Hey, what's up, Michael? How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Thanks a lot, boss. Sorry, I'm just taking my food delivery at the time. I wanted to comment on the Mookie Betts comment you made earlier about how you mocked the Red Sox for getting under the tax threshold. But you praised Comrade Cashman for doing it in 2015.
Did he trade Aaron Judge to do it? Did he trade his best player?
No, but okay, please.
So that's a complete. You have no argument.
Please
I also gave the Red Sox an out. I said if the Red Sox knew that they can't, I'll let you elaborate. But if the Red Sox knew that Mookie Betts, right, was not going to sign with them, then they should have traded him. If they traded him for money, it's disgraceful.
So maybe that's why they traded him then.
That's what I said. Did you hear me say it at the beginning of the show?
Okay, so allow me to elaborate. The Red Sox also did it to trade David Price's contract and still got a valuable asset back at Verdugo. If they would have traded Mookie Betts straight up, they would have got a Herschel Walker boatload in return. But Comrade Cashman traded players in 2015, and you praised him, but and they were all players.
So you elaborated, Patrick, and all you did was you dug yourself a bigger hole. I am asking you this question. Don't shout over me. Who did Cashman trade to get under the threshold?
He signed players that he signed to disastrous contracts, and you praised him for it.
I didn't praise him. I'm saying that the Yankees traded the best player on their team to get under the tax threshold.
They did. Aroldis Chapman.
They traded. That wasn't about getting
Patrick,
with all due respect, you don't even know what you're talking about. They didn't trade Aroldis Chapman to get underneath the tax threshold. They traded Aroldis Chapman to rebuild and then signed him the very next year. So they never got any salary relief. You're a fool. Don't come at me with weak stuff like that.
Oh, that's weak stuff.
Comrade Cashman. Oh. He thinks he's so clever. Comrade Cashman. The bottom line is this. If the Yankees traded Aaron Judge to get under the threshold, then that would be disgraceful. Now, if they trade Aaron Judge because they want to trade Aaron Judge, different story. There's no reason to trade Mookie Betts because of money. Now, if you knew he wasn't going to sign, then they made a smart move.
But first of all, it was 2016, not 2015. Second of all, as you said, everybody they dealt, they didn't deal them away to get under the threshold. They gave them away because they felt they weren't going to win a championship that year, and they wanted to get value for these players. And what did Miller end up becoming? Right? And then Chapman, they got back.
Miller ended up becoming Gleyber Torres. Frazier.
But what did Miller become? I mean, he had that
he
one.
He was never the same pitcher with the Yankees.
He was pretty good
with the Indians that year.
That year he was good with the Indians.
But that wasn't about a salad dump.
Right, exactly.
That was about rebuilding.
Right, he was wrong. Plus, the Yankees got tremendous hauls back, and Miller didn't turn out to be anything in Cleveland, and they got Chapman back. Now, it might have been a mistake at the end to get Chapman back, but that was that's neither here nor there. The fact is they traded away a commodity, got something huge back in return for a player that they were able to get back in free agency. If they were so concerned with getting under the threshold, Michael, then why did they give Chapman so much money back in free agency?
They had,
so
he's dead wrong because he doesn't have an answer. If they traded away their best player to get under the tax threshold, then they deserve to get ripped because of the Yankees. If the Red Sox traded Mookie Betts because of to get under the tax threshold and piggyback David Price on him, that's disgraceful. They have too much money to ever give up a player of that ilk for money. No big market team should ever lose a player because of money that they want to keep.
Now, I understand.
You can't make the argument that Mookie Betts is not. He's right under Mike Trout as the second best player in baseball.
Sometimes, and this is the new thing that happens, this is not a salary cap, but we're talking about the threshold, where sometimes you get rid of something bad and you got to make it attractive. So it was difficult to move David Price. So you're probably going to have to entice a team to take Price. But you don't entice them with Mookie Betts. Right?
No.
And if that was by design to get under the threshold, then that's what we're talking about. Yeah, you got rid of David Price, but you also got rid of your best player.
One of the best players in the world, a homegrown Red Sox who's beloved in Boston. Now, did he love Boston back? I don't know. That's why I'm giving them an out. If they knew he was not going to sign with them, then obviously I would agree with making the deal rather than having him play this year. I would agree with it. But if it was just because of money, absolutely disgraceful.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Go to the phones again, 1-800-919-3776. Let's go to Irvin in Connecticut. Irvin.
Hey, Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, what's going on?
All right, I'm a Red Sox fan, and I would have loved to see Mookie stay with the Red Sox, of course. But I heard that they offer him, did you guys hear about that, $300 million.
Yep. That's why I say if they knew he wasn't going to sign Irvin, then they had to trade him.
Exactly. And we got a championship with him. You know, more power to him. He could get another one. We got some assets. You know, we got Verdugo. We got the other kid. So there's no hard feelings. I really feel good about the trade. I mean,
the only way that I would feel bad about Irvin is if they did it for money. And again, they've got so much money and they make so much money. You can't lose a homegrown player who's one of the best players in the game, squeaky clean. Everybody loves him.
Right.
He's one of the faces of baseball. You just don't give those guys away for money.
And it's, I'd like to know why he didn't want to resign with Boston. And if it's because of the city, as you said, and how difficult it is sometimes for African American players to play for that team. Considering the current climate we're in, Michael, then the Red Sox are in a lot of trouble. You know, because is the climate going to change anytime soon? Like, that's not even the team's fault, is it?
Well, I give the team credit, though, because they took huge steps in admitting that stuff has happened at Fenway Park.
Right.
And they put the Black Lives Matter sign on the bleachers throughout this whole season.
Right.
So they're doing the right thing. They could
Absolutely.
Sell that to a player.
But if players are like, listen, it's nothing you're doing wrong. It's just I don't feel comfortable in this city. Yeah, then you do everything you can just to not be the blame for that. But, you know, how can a city change? How can a team change a city's perception of a certain player? Now, it's like fraudulent because they love David Ortiz. Like, so, but, you know, when you talk about those types of relationships, Michael, I mean, it exists. We've heard it existed. And, you know, death threats. We've seen it in all four sports in Boston, how difficult it is to be a player that travels there, never mind play for the team.
Now,
but
Patrick, if that's
the narrative, that's tough to be able to overcome.
Who I yelled at, he wants to – he said, you called me a fool. I should be able to explain myself. Do I take the call or not?
Yeah, why not? You can handle it.
Didn't he get a chance to explain?
Yeah. Okay. He go ahead, Patrick. You try to shout over me again and say Comrade Cashman because it's so clever. Please, explain yourself.
I did not shout over you. I was
only
trying to get my point across. And
yeah, you're trying to talk over me. See, I'm the host of the show, so when I'm done talking, you talk.
Now, Michael, sir,
I was just trying to get my point across.
All right, so say it.
The floor is yours. The floor is yours.
The floor is totally yours, Patrick. Go.
Brian Cashman is on record saying the 2016 trade, yes, I was wrong, Don, I had the year wrong, was in part because they wanted to get under the tax threshold to 2017. He traded Aroldis Chapman, Andrew Miller, and Chase Headley, all deals that he signed to and then he gets credits for. Mookie Betts was traded for the same reason, and they would have gotten a Gleyber Torres-type player, which they might have anyway in Verdugo, if they didn't include the David Price deal. So how is it okay for Cashman to get away with it?
Because Patrick, they traded Chapman and Miller. They did not want to re-sign Headley. He didn't have a good year the last year.
But Cashman signed him is my point.
I understand he signed him. They signed him, and the contract was over, and they said they got the most out of him. But Chapman and Miller were traded at the trade deadline. They still applied to the Yankees' salary.
And Andrew Miller had two more years left on his deal. Chapman was the only free agent. Yes, they re-signed him, and they got Torres.
Because they said they weren't good enough. They weren't good enough
year,
to win, so
yes.
They said, let's, and you know what? They still competed anyway because Gary
right.
Sanchez had those
yes.
magical 2 months.
And
but
you just
Patrick,
made, you just
how
made,
do you compare that to trading a homegrown superstar?
You just made my second point because the whole year that year, the fans were chanting, we need the young players to come up with these veteran players to take the next step. Yes, we were crying about Rob Refsnyder and we were fools, but we didn't know we had Gary Sanchez and Aaron Judge in the farm system.
Okay, but they got them up when they got them up after they made the trades. They opened up the whole portal for them. But how?
But those positions were available at the time.
But I'm asking you a question. What have the Yankees ever done that approximates trading one of the best players in baseball because of money?
They just traded three players. Andrew Miller, Chapman, Headley.
But they're not Mookie Betts.
No, that wasn't. But you're wrong, Patrick. The one thing that you're missing here, that was not because of money. Because they felt they weren't good enough to win.
I got to respectfully disagree. Brian Cashman admitted it was because of money, because he wanted to get under the tax threshold for 2017.
But you didn't get that. How does that make sense, Patrick? They signed Chapman at the end of the year to an even bigger contract. They didn't get under the threshold in 2016.
They got rid of Miller, McCann, and I didn't mention Brian McCann, the other disastrous contract. They traded Brian Miller, Andrew Miller, and Chase Headley to make room for the overall.
But they did all of that to open up the playing time.
But wait a second, it wasn't
a threshold. They weren't good enough of a team. Who approximated trading the second best player in baseball for money? Have the Yankees ever done that? And I promise you, Patrick, if they did that, I would excoriate them.
That part I misheard. I thought you were excoriating the Red Sox for getting them under the threshold, and that part I misheard.
No. If they traded, Patrick, Mookie Betts so that they could piggyback the awful contract that they signed with David Price, then that's disgraceful. They used Mookie Betts as a magic bullet to get rid of David Price's contract. And you know why they did that? Because they foolishly gave Chris Sale the money. And they foolishly gave Nathan Eovaldi all that money. So they were locked into those terrible contracts. They said, well, how do we get under the threshold for 2020? Well, here's how. Let's trade one of the best players who ever lived so we could piggyback David Price's contract. How does anybody even defend that?
The point is the quality of the player. As you said, Chase Headley was a pedestrian third baseman who they did not want to bring back. Andrew Miller was a guy whose arm was going to go, and it proved out that he was not going to be the same player after that 2016 playoff run. He was great for the Indians that year, and then what's happened to him since? And Aroldis Chapman, who you're able to get back via free agency with a four-year contract the very next year after he won the World
and
Series.
And also, Don, if they did do that to get under the cap in 2017 or under the tax, which they were, they went to the seventh game of the ALCS in 2017. The Red Sox had one of the worst seasons in the history of the franchise after getting rid of Mookie Betts.
The Red Sox would have been a 90-plus loss team this year.
Maybe more. So maybe 100.
So the Yankees were better, got better, but they never in any estimation traded their best player away.
One of the best players ever.
It was one guy they didn't want.
It would be like they got
one
rid
guy
of Mickey Mantle in order to get under a salary threshold, or Don Mattingly.
They traded three guys. One they didn't want, one they knew they were going to get back, and one they knew what didn't have a long-term, was not going to stay healthy for the final 2 years of his contract.
And the reason they got rid of Brian McCann was to make room for Gary Sanchez. And they knew they were going to get back Chapman. And Miller, they thought, Miller was always a ticking time bomb when it came to his arm. They said, let's get rid of him now when we're not good enough before he blows his arm out with us and then we're stuck with him. I thought it was brilliant what they did. To compare that to them, again, I'm giving the Red Sox an out, everybody. If they knew that he wasn't going to sign, then bravo for the deal. But if you got rid of him and just to get under the tax threshold, shame on you. You should be ashamed of yourself forever.
They had to have known he wasn't going to sign with them.
I agree. That's why I don't even understand why people are going nuts over it. I actually thought I was giving them an out at the beginning of the game or beginning of the show. If they knew he wasn't going to sign, then this was the right move. But if they knew he would have signed, if they gave him more money and they got rid of one of the best players ever, then that's silly. It would be like Horace Stoneman getting rid of Willie Mays. Why? Why would you do it? For money?
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Go to Jared in Montreal. Jared.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Jared?
I'm doing well, thanks. So I do think it was about money at the end of the day, because I've read some things like about the worry of being Boston, but you got to think also Jackie Bradley Jr. just signed there for 1 year, so I think money talks. Money will talk no matter where you go. So I think you have to look at it where Boston was going to go into their third year being over the salary tax, and you automatically jump up to 50% there. And for a third year in a row being over the tax, you're going to start losing draft position. And so if they re-sign Betts to his monster deal, they're not going to get out of the salary tax with the contract they already have.
They offered $300 million, didn't they?
Yeah, but that was because – but the $300 million, right, that's still not the that's still less than what he would have signed with per year, right? So I
well,
think,
but still,
I
it would have kept them over the tax. I think they used him to get rid of David Price's contract.
Yeah, so that way they can get out of the salary tax because then that way there was no way.
Could you imagine that? You're trading one of the best players in baseball, one of the best players in baseball history. He'd be in the top 50 to get under the salary tax? Find another way. You've got Hein Bloom there. He's really bright. There's got to be another way. And you got yourself into a terrible contract with J.D. Martinez, and you should never have signed Chris Sale to that deal, ever. You knew his arm was just a ticking time bomb. And then Nathan Eovaldi, obviously with his heroic performance in the World Series, you felt you had to bring him back. Again, if it's about money, and I don't think it is about money, because they did offer him $300 million. And when he turned that down, they probably said, he's not signing here. James in Queens.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Huge Red Sox fan. And I think one of the things you touched on it just briefly, it was the J.D. Martinez. When he opted in at the end of the 2019 season, that just threw the monkey in the wrench because they knew that they're going to have to pay Martinez. And it was a big salary. It's kind of dead weight now. I think also you've got to remember, when we go back to February when Betts was traded to the Dodgers, the Red Sox were under investigation for the cheating in 2018. So they didn't know they were going to get wiped out of draft choices and et cetera. So, yeah.
I would disagree with you on that because from what I knew, the Red Sox knew internally they didn't do anything near what the Astros did. But let me ask you this question, James.
Yes.
You're a Red Sox fan. You're watching this guy put on a clinic in the postseason. Does it make you sick to your stomach? This is a homegrown Red Sox.
Let me put it this way. When Johnny Damon went to the Yankees, it bothered me. What do you think Mookie Betts does?
It's got to kill you.
It does kill me. But I'm saying to myself, you know what? I just didn't feel they were going to sign him. And the end of the day is, with the Eovaldi, Sale, and these big contracts that Dombrowski signed these guys to, They had no other way of going around it because they made it clear they were getting under the tax code for 2020. They made it very clear.
I get it, but imagine sacrificing your best player to get under the tax.
It does. And I have to look at Mookie Betts in a Dodger uniform for the next 11 years. And yes, it does bother me. But it is what it is.
But you know what? You have four championships in a short period of time. You gotta go with that. Let's go to Louie in the Bronx. Louie.
Mike, I want to get back to that Stroman.
Okay.
All right, obviously, he's taking a shot at Cashman, and rightfully so. I mean, Cashman didn't want him, but why does he got to say that he wasn't he's not a difference maker? He had to say that. And you know what? Let's look at the Yankee pitching staff, and let's look at the guys that Cashman did get. Okay, Cole was a no-brainer, but correct me if I'm wrong. Did the Yankees have a shot at him coming out of high school that they didn't want to pull the trigger and give him the bonus?
Who's Stroman? I don't know. I know that Stroman's dad is a big Yankee fan.
Look that up. Coming out of high school, the Yankees.
But Louie, I agree. He is ticked off at. He's ticked off.
All right, so that was a no-brainer, Michael.
Okay, but let me ask you this: why does he have to take shots at the pitchers then? How does that help him out?
Because you know what? He's basically showing and telling everybody who's a Yankee fan, look who you got instead of me. And that's it. Wasn't really taking a shot at the pitcher. He was taking a shot at Cashman. And let's look at Cashman. All right, Paxton. When was the last time you towed the rubber? And the first year you had him, he was a basket case. Okay,
he went 10-0 down the stretch the first year you had him.
Come on, Michael. He was a basket case. Stop.
But Louie, he went 10-0 down the stretch.
All right, Michael. But you know what? When was the last time he towed the rubber, Michael?
At the beginning of this season, I guess.
At the beginning of the season. And his contract's running out here, Michael?
Yeah, he's not coming back.
That's not a bad signing.
It wasn't a signing. It was a trade.
All right, so Michael, it's a bad move. His track record as far as acquiring pitchers is horrible.
Louie, here's the problem, all right? You have an excellent case about Cashman and his Achilles heel, which is pitching. But there's two different things at play here. Stroman doesn't have to tweet that. And then he tweets back, Michael, I forgot about Severino. Don, and, oh, by the way, if you want to sign me, I'll sign there. So,
Don,
I mean,
and I'm going to interrupt you on that, okay? Because I'm going to tell you, yes, Stroman didn't have to tweet that. But who started this when he could have been acquired? And Cashman, the GM, comes around and says that he doesn't fit in our plans. He's not a difference maker. Can't you just turn around and say we don't want the guy?
I don't know if Michael will agree or not.
I would have a problem with that also. I would have a major problem with that.
Listen, Michael, you have to admit that sometimes Brian didn't have to say that. When was the last time the Yankees smelled
the World Series? Let's be honest about that.
2017.
Come on, Michael. You had a one in the ALCS.
You can't smell the World Series from the seventh game of the ALCS?
No, you can't, Michael. You can't.
That's where you smell it from.
You're not in the series, okay?
But you just said smelled the World Series.
Michael, they're one win away from being in the World Series.
When
was the last time Cashman won a World Series?
All right, 11
years? 2009. There you go, 11 years,
right,
Michael.
But Louis, I will defend you on this, and I'll be interested to hear what Michael has to say. There are some times that Brian doesn't help himself with the way he talks. Like, he didn't have to say that about Stroman, right? He didn't have to. When Harper was out there, he didn't say we have too many outfielders. I mean, sometimes he does talk himself into a corner.
They kind of said it. We have too many outfielders.
Okay, but listen, Michael, Harper, I agree not to get him. He's a cancer. I don't like the kid. But anyway, that's besides the point. He didn't have to make that statement about Stroman. This is a GM, Michael. You just don't do that. All right? And stop defending Cashman. And that seventh game in that playoff series that you lost, you didn't even think you were going to be in the playoffs that far.
But Louis, you're making great points, and you sound like a great fan, and you're a great caller. But to say they haven't sniffed the World Series, if you can't smell the World Series from Game 7 of the ALCS, then you have something wrong with your olfactory glands.
But,
and 2 years later, they went to the sixth game of the ALCS against the Astros.
That's smelling the World Series, too.
It's a Yankee fan that you just feel you have to get to the World Series every year. I get it. You were brought up that way. I understand. But to say they haven't sniffed it, that's just not true.
I think he's a Yankee hater, and I think he just was a little over the top with his hatred.
I don't think he's a hater. I think he's a Yankee fan who doesn't like Cashman.
Well, because he said you didn't get to the World Series, that suggested that he's coming from another place. But either way, there's a lot of Yankee fans that can't stand Cashman. But there is logic behind his hatred of Cashman, that there has been a problem with pitching. You have to admit that. I mean, you could be a big fan of Brian Cashman, but the one area, his one blind spot, has been pitching. But Stroman, that doesn't give Stroman the right to tweet what he tweeted.
But no, two wrongs don't make a right.
Yeah, pitching has been a bit of an issue.
In Brian's defense, and I don't have to defend Brian because, you know, I kind of attacked their decision, what they did in game two. So I'm not sitting here always defending him. But people were just excoriating him for not getting Stroman. So he probably got his back up against the wall, said he's not a difference maker to us.
Right. But that's...
So that doesn't mean that Marcus Stroman has to hammer the other pitchers that are left on the staff.
No,
it's not their fault they didn't get him.
There's two different issues. No matter being against Cashman does not defend Stroman. They're two separate issues. Just because you can prove that Cashman's had a blind spot with pitching does not give Stroman the right to start tweeting like he did. Plus, he's all over the place talking that he forgot about Severino and that he would still sign with the Yankees. So I don't even know why we're giving the tweets the credence we're giving it. But to bash Cashman as a reason that Stroman is right, I can't connect those dots. I can't.
All right, let's towel off. What do you say?
Again?
Yeah.
Another towel?
It's been that sort of show.
Okay.
Right out of the gate hot.
I'd rather air dry.
I'll tell you one thing. I know this is going to be, you double jointed and patting my... This is some show. It just gets better every day.
Well, I was thinking about that.
I think we've returned to pre-COVID levels now.
This is the second time. Let's be honest here, because we always lift the curtain on the show. This is the second time that I finished the show meeting really wondering what was going to come out of Michael's mouth open show.
No idea.
And this is the second time where we killed it. Like, we had nothing and it became glorious.
I've got even more stuff. I got stuff locked in the chamber right now like you wouldn't even believe.
Really? There's more in the chamber?
Oh, yeah. And there's a list today, a Daily Don at 4:30. Oh,
yes.
It was the one I had yesterday that we didn't get to because the show was so glorious.
And people all night, people were raving about the Doc interview. Hey, Doc!
I have not gotten... That's probably the most feedback I got on Twitter, and just personally from friends, text messages, since the Dolan interview in studio.
Oh, my.
Seriously.
Wow.
And I think it's all Doc. Doc's a great storyteller, and that's a center stage, Michael. I don't know if you guys would do that.
You know what? That's not a bad idea.
He'd be great on center stage.
That's not a bad idea. I sit back and say, tell stories.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy. Hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. It's me. I'm back. And guess what? It's another Don segment.
We're doing the list, Michael. I don't care if you don't like it.
The Daily Don.
I'll fight to the death for this list.
It's the Daily Don Show. He makes lists.
Take it away, Donnie.
All right, I was going to do this yesterday for the start of the World Series, but we were just chock full, right? So we're going to do it today. Why not? There's still possibly six games left in this series. Top five World Series over the last 25 years.
Wow.
All right, I'm
30.
Ready.
30 years. I misread my own handwriting. 30 years.
So we're going back to what?
1990. Since 1990.
Right. Well, obviously the Cubs Indians would be in there.
And where would it be?
I think it should be number one.
Well, that would be wrong. It'd be three. 2016 Cubs Indians. Cubs won in seven. Three games were decided by one run. They were even 27 runs apiece in the series. And, of course, the epic Game 7 back and forth that went 10 innings, won by the Cubs 8-7. I've got Cubs-Indians, number three. Good job,
well,
Peter. Good pull. Good pull.
I would say this is one of the top two World Series that I ever witnessed, and that was the 1991 series between the Braves and the Twins.
Hey, Michael?
Yep.
That's number one.
Yeah.
Twins win in seven. Five of the seven games. Five of the seven were decided by one run. And a classic Game 6, one off the bat of Kirby Puckett. And then, of course, the Game 7 duel between Morris and Smoltz would go back, you know, just epic 1-0 Twins victory. Back, Peter, when the Twins actually won playoff games.
Last that game ever covered as a writer.
1991. And Michael, that might be in the top five of greatest World Series ever.
I agree.
But it's number one in the last 30 years.
Did you, Michael, did you keep a Homer hanky?
I might have brought one home, but I don't, in the moves, I don't think I have them anymore. But what a great city. Minneapolis
you're a big
is really
fan.
Special.
Oh,
I love
big,
it.
Big fan. Big, big fan.
How about... How about 2001?
That's got to be number two.
Yankees D-backs.
Yankees D-backs is indeed, Michael, number two. Mm-hmm. D-backs win in seven. Classic games 4, 5, and 7. Just so much happened, obviously, with the shadow of 9/11 still amongst everyone. And, of course, we talk so much about George Bush throwing out the first pitch and the come-from-behind victories for the Yankees on the home runs, the Mr. November with Jeter. Just so much going into that series. And you could have definitely had it at number one, but I put it at number two.
So you're going back to 1990 is what you're saying.
Oh, sure.
1990.
To the last 30 years.
I'd say... I'd say 95 was a great World Series, the Braves and the Indians.
No, I did think about that one, Michael.
Sorry, Michael.
In the top five. Who are you taking out?
Well, we'll see who you have in.
Yeah. Well, I think you got to go Mets Red Sox 86.
Well,
that's
you could,
not 90.
Unfortunately, that was 34 years ago. So
that doesn't count.
Listening.
So bad at baseball and math.
That's
and time.
I was two for the first two. I just got the year.
Really, good job.
90. Let me not count that because that's 34 years. This is personal bias, but underrated in my opinion. Great World Series based on the storyline of the way the series started, then the middle. It had three different distinct parts, and that would be last year's World Series. The National
about
over
it,
the Astros.
But I
thought about
outside.
It.
had it on the outside.
You thought about it. You thought about it.
Oh, yeah, of course I thought about it.
How about Giants Angels?
Giants Angels, Michael, 2002 is number five.
That's right.
Five of those seven were decided by one run. In a losing effort, Barry Bonds hit four home runs, including one of the longest home runs I ever saw in Anaheim. And, of course, if you remember, Dusty Baker's kid almost getting run over at home plate. There was a lot going on. Two wild card teams going at it with each other. I've got Angels, Giants, 2002, number five. So you've got 5, 3, 2, and 1. We're still looking for number four.
I've got number four, but let Peter play his reindeer games.
No, go for it, Michael. This is your lane.
Say Cardinals Rangers was a great series in 2011.
It was a great series, and I thought about this one a lot because it had, of course, and we'll see tomorrow night, the Joe Buck call. But there were a lot of blowouts. The series was competitive because it went seven, but there was a lot of blowouts. Who are you taking out? So I do not have it in the top five, but it was thought about.
How about Dodgers Red Sox?
Thought about that one as well. Also,
games
that were non-competitive. This one was a little bit closer to competitive. It's actually this World Series, Michael. At the time it was played, it was the first time since 1962 the teams alternated wins through the seven-game series. I thought it was great. Classic Game 7, one on a walk-off. By a
How
player
about,
that
I got
go
it.
On and world, win
it.
A World Series almost a decade over a decade later with another team.
Marlins, Indians.
Marlins, Indians, 1997 is number four. As I mentioned, they alternated wins, and it would be Edgar Renteria's RBI in the ninth that would win the World Series for the Florida Marlins. Edgar Renteria would go on to win a World Series 13 years later with the Giants, ironically enough. But that's your list. Angels, Giants, number five. Marlins, Indians, number four. Indians, Cubs, three. Yankees, Diamondbacks, two. Twins, Braves, number one.
Solid list.
I did think about doing all the World Series, but there's just too many to choose from to narrow it down to five because there were some really the 75 series, the 72 series between the A's and the Reds. Great. Of course, the 86 World Series was epic. So I just decided I had to include Twins, Braves. That's why I went 30. Because I knew you were at that one, and you'd be able to guess that. So that's my list today.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Jets made a trade. Jets get a six-round pick in 2022, and the 49ers get Jordan Willis and a seventh-round pick in 2021. So a little used linebacker, they trade.
There's more to come.
Oh,
deadline's
what,
on Election Day, right? November 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a little less than 2 weeks. I'm sure there's going to be more guys out the door.
I've got this this pleasant announcement.
Here we go.
As you know, 2020, it has been an awful year for so many. So all of us here at 98.7 ESPN and at the Michael K. Show would like to make it better for you. How are we going to do that?
I need to know.
We're going to give our listeners 20 incredible prizes in 20 days. So make sure you're listening to find out how to win some amazing gifts to help improve your lifestyle. And it all starts next Thursday, October 29th, right here with the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN. 20 incredible prizes in 20 incredible days.
Awesome.
Wow.
Nice, right?
Do you have any examples yet? You want to tell me what the prizes are?
I have examples. I'm legally bound not to.
Oh, come on.
Nope. But they're unbelievable. They're life changers.
When does it start?
I just said
a week
from this Thursday.
What day is that?
The 29th.
Of October?
All right.
Yes.
Thanks for playing.
October 29th, Thursday, October 29th. You know, it's
October 29th.
He really is. He's the annoying brother that we don't have. Don't come at me with weak stuff like that. Let's go to the phones. What do you think?
Yeah.
Dennis in Huntington. Dennis.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Before I get to my Yankee question, I just have to address Don. I don't know what's going on lately with Don. He's just been complacent and not engaged.
Wow.
We haven't seen a rant from him in years. I mean, months. And
yeah,
I mean,
more.
I don't know.
I've had rants.
Mini rants, but nothing like I fell in love with this show like 6-7 years ago because of you. And it was your bulldog mentality, and now it's kind of like you're a poodle. And I don't know what's going on with you, man.
He's trying to goat me into something here. Home has definitely affected things a little bit here. But listen, when it happens, it happens. If you're a fan of the show, you know that there are sometimes long periods of time that I don't flip out. But to say I'm not engaged
I feel like you don't like the heat you get from it. From when it goes viral, you get embarrassed, and now you're starting. You just don't want to do it anymore. And
Dennis, I predicted this. Once the children came, he became soft.
Yeah,
he's not as angry.
I mean,
this is weird. What was
that, 2 years ago,
changed his whole lot. Yeah, they're a little over 2 years old. He's not the same guy. Not the same broadcast.
Not the same.
You missed Skip Bayless. Did you hear the Skip Bayless when I eviscerated him? That's no mini rant.
Yeah, you almost got there.
But you hold yourself back. Dennis is right, Don. I held yourself back.
There's only so much the FCC will allow. I call him the talentless hack. Peter, come to my defense here.
I'm with Don 100%. This is weak.
He doesn't scream Ed Crane pull, right, Dennis, like he used to?
Come on.
Seriously, I'm going to try to be as calm as possible just to stick it to you. All right? Is that you guys think
because
I'm just
that,
a one-trick pony.
That's all you know
that's
now.
That's all you think that I am. You think that I'm just like a one-trick pony, that all I bring to the table on the show is a rant. And so when I'm not ranting, raving, and going crazy, no. You said that I'm not engaged, I'm not into it. So my interview skills, if I've got something I got to say to Michael, we kind of debate back and forth, completely useless. My only reason for being on the show is to blow my
top. You're not debating with Michael anymore. You take his side.
What?
And you go, even if it's going against Peter, you're taking Michael's side on every single argument.
I don't think you listen. I think there's been plenty of examples where I've argued with Michael to the point where he's disgusted with me and can't wait for 7 o'clock. Right, Michael?
I think that Dennis brings up some salient points.
This is what makes
you just a punk.
Because
let me get to my main point.
I'm done with this. Yeah, I'm done with you.
Dennis, please, your main point.
All right, so the Yankees use analytics. We all know this. It's not working in the playoffs. Why don't they use analytics for, like, the first 120 games of the season once they clinch the playoffs and they switch something up so then when they get in the playoffs, they're ready for the playoffs and it's not all analytically driven? I don't know how to do it.
I like the feel that you've brought to this phone call. Here's the thing that kind of throws a monkey wrench into it. The Yankees might even be less analytic than the Dodgers in the race. They're both in the World Series. So the Yankees feel that analytics is still the best way to win in the postseason, but it's more of a crapshoot because of a short series. Doesn't mean that they still would go against analytics. They feel that the analytics statistically is the way to go. Yeah, it's not as slam dunkish as it would be over 162 games, but they still feel that that's the way to go. And the two teams in the World Series are analytic teams. They do everything by analytics. Everything. Their managers are their hands are tied because of analytics.
So if that's the case, then nothing really is going to change that.
No, not a thing.
But that's what frustrates, I think, a lot of fans, Michael, is that you have these emotional press conferences. Hal Steinbrenner comes on saying he's disappointed with the fan base, but that's all well and good. But it's just going back. All right, we're gonna do it again. We're gonna try again. Eventually, this is going to work. Eventually, the statistics tell us that we are going to win the World Series.
Yep.
And I guess to their defense, I think the Dodgers are winning this series. So it'll be the same thing. Listen, the Dodgers went through a lot of struggles of winning the division 8 straight times and failing in the postseason, and they finally got it right. And now they feel vindicated. Or did they go out and get the best player in baseball, and that finally put them over the top? So I don't know, but I just think it frustrates fans, especially ones that grew up with George in his fire and brimstone, of just kind of saying, yeah, we're disappointed, but we have no regrets, and we're just going to go out and do the exact same thing next year, and hopefully it works out for us.
I think that's what's going to happen.
So it's like Bull Durham. You know, we're going to go out there and God willing, it's all going to come out all right. You know, it's I don't think this fan base wants to hear that. So the manager can never get fired. That there isn't going to be some big trade or there's going to be some big move. That
nobody's
going
to always try to get better players. I think. I mean, the players aren't locked in, and again. You know, people say it was the pitching, and they were a little short on starting pitching. That's why they did what they did in game two, although they were wrong. But they lost the fifth game 2-1.
See, you said they're wrong. I don't know if they think they were wrong.
No, they don't think they're wrong. So, they think they're right.
Right.
And, I'm and saying they're wrong.
And so that means that next year they're going to prove to you by probably doing the exact same thing.
But if they go out and get better pitching, they won't have to do that. I think that they did not believe in their pitching. They did not believe in Davey Garcia. They did not believe in Jay Happ to be able to pitch that game. They just didn't. Without help by flipping lineups.
And why would you agree with that caller? Why do you want to devalue me? So that's all I am to you is just some rant machine.
See, now you're an antagonistic little imp, okay? I'm not saying that you're not valuable. The screaming and that's gone. You're still incredibly valuable. You're the linchpin of the show. But don't tell me that you're the same guy as you were pre-children.
You know,
you're
it's
not.
Funny, Peter. It's funny.
Fix that!
I go through this, right, where what's happened to Don? Don's not the same anymore. And yet there will be a rant, like somebody had retweeted the Gil stuff, right? Yeah. And then I sometimes read the comments just to see what people have to say.
Sid Luckman!
And the number of people are like, has anybody figured it out yet? This is all just an act. He's not really that upset.
I hope he doesn't play.
I can't win either way. Either I don't do it enough, but if I do it too much, it's all, he's making it up. This is who I am. I'm a person that when I get aggravated, I'm going to tell you exactly how I feel all the time. But for a caller to call up and say that I'm not engaged in the show, and then they have the host of the show saying you're making some salient points, makes me sick.
It's inhumane.
That was wrong. You are engaged in the show, but you're not the same lunatic you used to be. You're just not. That's a good thing. You've evolved. You're not a caveman.
I have the ability.
That's the answer!
Over any moment to explore. I will say that during the pandemic, there's been a lot of other things that have been way more important than stupid sports. I'll be honest with you.
Wow.
For me to get aggravated over sometimes things that are happening when there's literally people losing their lives, it's difficult.
I'll climb over it.
And during this, I've had some really interesting rants during the course of the pandemic. And the Skip Bayless stuff, thank you, Andrew, for pointing it out and reminding the audience, reminding me to tell the audience that Skip Bayless happened not that long ago.
It was like 2 weeks. It wasn't on TV, though.
It wasn't on television, so maybe he was a yes viewer.
Yeah, also the DiPietro stuff last week was close.
No. Because, Peter, you got some of it. But the real off-the-range Don, it doesn't exist anymore.
He knows
I'm
how
not
to
saying
slide.
It's a bad
it's
thing.
It's basically falling down.
That's gold. Right. That's gold. People fell in love with the show because of that. He's not the same guy. Those two children have rightfully softened him up.
Poof!
It's had incredible rants. The Matt Forte was when the kids were alive.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, the Matt Forte. That was I hope he doesn't play. Wasn't that it?
I hope he doesn't play.
Right. And the Cespedes, it's basically falling down also, post-kids.
But they were clay then. Now they're human beings.
That doesn't matter. Come on.
Yeah!
Well, listen, I'm sorry that my value to this show is lessened.
See, Peter, am I saying his value is less?
No.
His value is different.
I don't agree with Michael, Don, but he's not saying your value is less.
I think you're the most valuable person of the three of us. I'm sorry. You are.
Well, that caller.
That hurts.
Doesn't agree with you, but
he
you said
loved
he made
the old Don
and allowed him to make a second point, which disgusted me further. When somebody aggravates a host like that, you don't let him make a second point.
I didn't know you were aggravated. The old Don would have been screaming. Well, then I would have known.
I held back because I was feeling like I was being baited. Right, Peter? Like I think that was just I'm going to get Don the rant.
That guy's a master at that.
I'm bored. Right. And I'm going to call up and try to get Don to entertain me. Like he's making requests.
You're a jukebox.
It's not a top 40 station.
That's right. Out of way, Don.
Can't make requests. No request radio. That's the one thing. We do a lot on this show, no requests.
Wow. Let's take a brief time out and towel off for the third time today.
So much toweling. I'm
a lot
chafing.
Of toweling. Right here on Yes. Oh. Go ahead. What else? What are you going to say, Petey?
Just I'm chafing.
What?
Nothing.
I know nothing.
By the constant toweling off.
Right. Thank you, Don.
Come on, dog.
Thank you.
How are your parents? Are they enjoying their time in New York?
My parents left.
And in a huff, or was it planned?
No, not. I wish it was in a huff. It was the opposite of a huff. What's a slow?
This is so exciting.
Was it emotional?
Well, no. It's we went to go pick up, get the car, and the car got towed.
Oh no!
And so I go. I say to my dad, "All right, Dad, I got a." He goes, "It was right here." But you know,
their car.
Yeah.
Oh wow!
And my parents have been parking in New York for 50 years. This is not a thing. I go, "What happened?" He goes, "It was right here." I said, "You probably parked in the bus stop and didn't realize you were on the wrong side of the sign." So I said, "What's your license plate number? I need to type it in here to see if the car got towed." I don't know my license plate number. So I go, call my mom. She doesn't know. We call Geico. They don't know. We call AAA. They don't know. Eventually, he found an email with the license plate, and I drove them down to the Pound, a place that I work so hard to avoid. I haven't been to the Pound, knock on wood, in like 4 years.
That is one of the most joyless places in New York City.
It's everyone listening to my voice knows what it's like when you dedicate your life to being like, I'm never coming back here. Never coming back. And I brought my parents down there, and I waited. My mom went in. I waited with my dad because we figured my mom might get treated nicer. Gotta tell you, she was out in 20 minutes. It was the fastest trip to the Pound I've ever seen in my life.
Well, she's super hot. That gets it done.
And also, I want you to know, above me right now and forever, my dad brought me, you won't see it for a minute, the full-size photo of Mike and Mindy on the kibbutz.
Is that right?
That's right, Marshawn.
Interesting.
Beautiful.
That is a classic picture.
Oh. Father's mother of Jay's.
And for those that are watching, yes, those two people have done things they don't want you to know about. Did your dad own a comb back in those days or not? It was just, that wasn't an option, the comb?
You got to be honest. My dad looks great.
He does.
Great mustache.
They both look great.
They look great. I don't know why you think they look like criminals.
Well, your dad does. Mindy doesn't.
You
Mindy looks
look
like
great
a young, innocent
look like
girl.
You're on the lam.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.